Good evening, I'm Tom Lounges. Welcome to a very special edition of Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. My guest tonight is jazz guitar great Larry Coryell. One of the pioneers of jazz fusion, Larry will be performing live November 17th in a trio format at the Jazz Showcase in Chicago. Larry has worked with everybody from Dizzy and Miles to Billy Cobham and, well, numerous others. He joins me tonight to discuss his long journey through music as we spotlight songs from Larry's latest album, Sanpaku. Larry Coryell, our guest tonight on this very special edition of Midwest Beat. It's all coming up after your headlines here. I hope you'll stick around and jazz things up with me. Good evening to you, and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. I'm Tom Lounges, and tonight my guest is veteran music maker Larry Coryell, who's been a force on the jazz guitar scene since the 1960s and who's had quite an impact on fusion music, yet he's a string bender who plays all styles. Tonight I'll be talking with Larry about his career, and I'll be featuring songs from his newest album released this month, Sanpaku. In fact, let's start off the show by letting the music do the talking. This one's called If Miles Were Here. Larry Coryell joins us on the other side. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. I'm Tom Lounges, and tonight my guest is veteran music maker Larry Coryell. We just heard the song If Miles Were Here from Larry's latest new album, Senpaku. Welcome to the show, Larry. I've heard advanced tracks from the new album. I don't know if it's officially out yet or not as we are speaking here.
I don't think so. There's one correction we have to make on the liner notes anyway. I was remiss. I didn't notice that they said all compositions were written by me. But we did record Manteca by Dizzy, and we're in the process of rectifying that.
You often play and record with such great musical guests. Are there any featured guests on the new album?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially the drummer, Lee Pearson. He and I ran into each other earlier this year at a big festival in Jakarta, and we started hitting the late-night jam sessions after our regular performances there at the festival. And we had ran into each other a few years ago, and I remembered him, and he said he desired to do some playing together, and I was all for it. And we brought him out off the road from his regular job, which is with Chris Bode, and we spent 2 days in the studio having a great time.
This album has 7 cuts on it. Did you do all of those in the 2 days? That's a lot of work.
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. But because everybody, I mean, we had John Lee on bass, who has played with me in several bands, including the second edition of the 11th House. John and myself and Philip Catherine and Alphonse Mouzon, we've all played together a lot. And I've got this wonderful pianist named Lynn Arial, who teaches up in Jacksonville, and she was marvelous. She was fantastic. And, gee, I sound like Donald Trump. she can really play, man. She's bad. That sounds better.
There you go.
That sounds better. The heck of a reed and, saxophone and flute player who used to play with Arturo Sandoval. But he's local, and his name is Dan Jordan. Dan Jordan's fabulous.
You've worked in a variety of formats over the years, from solo acoustic, duos, trios, full bands. It sounds like you've got quite an ensemble there in the studio. What will you be taking out on the road when you tour behind this album, and when do you anticipate touring again?
Well, we're going to do a gig next week in Delray Beach, Florida, and we will do some of the music from Senpaku, and I will bring Dan with me, Dan Jordan. But to get the full personnel would be kind of difficult at this time, because John Lee has his own career running the Dizzy Gillespie Band, and Lee is always on the road with Chris Bode. There wasn't enough in the budget to bring a fifth member. If there had been, I would have brought down Lynn Arial.
Is this just a one-off date, or is it the kickoff of a tour?
I believe it's a one-off, but it's the first time this music will be played in front of an audience.
All right, and you're doing the entire album?
At least 3 or 4.
Okay.
The thing with Miles, if Miles were here, we might not be able to do that one, but we can definitely do Senpaku, we can definitely do Manteca. It'll be great.
Speaking of Manteca and Dizzy, let's play that now for the listeners. We'll be back with Larry Coryell after this.
Thank you. Thank you.
Manteca. That's a Dizzy song done by my guest tonight, Larry Coryell. It's off his latest album, San Paku. What inspired you to record a Dizzy song? Most of these are original songs, and you stuck that in there and gave it a great treatment.
Because I love Dizzy. Also, John and I, we actually played together with Dizzy. John, much more than me, but there had been occasions when John was Dizzy's right-hand man, and they would come to my town, and he'd call me up, and I'd come down and sit in. Dizzy was just, he wasn't just a musician and trumpet player. He was a force. He was a great composer. Manteca is a fantastic example of something very, very visceral and yet very enlightening at the same time. Manteca is just the Spanish word for grease.
Grease.
And, Dizzy was the greatest. I love Dizzy.
Speaking of great talents, you have played alongside some incredible talents during your 50-plus years as a career musician. Who stands out among them the most? If you had to name the three top, pinch-yourself moments that you got to work with someone.
Sonny Rollins, Stefan Grappelli, and even though he was very short, Miles Davis.
Miles was supposed to be quite a terror in the studio. Is that fact or fiction?
He was just brilliant. He was full of surprises, and he did stuff to make us play very differently, which is something I hope I have learned from him over the years.
One of the things about Miles that made him so timeless is the fact that he constantly reinvented himself and went from style to style and put his own fingerprints on it. You have done much the same. You were one of the early...
Yeah, I was definitely inspired by Miles' example.
You were one of the...
inspired.
One of the early pioneers of fusion guitar. How did you come into fusion? You were one of the first.
Well, I felt kind of out of sorts when I moved to New York when I was 22. And I was around all this great music. And at that time, a lot of it was avant-garde music. So I felt I should try some combinations that would get people's attention. And one of the combinations that came to mind was What if Coltrane and George Harrison were in the same room? Could they make anything interesting? And initially, I didn't think so, but the more I delved into it, I did think so. And I started thinking, well, what would happen if we put together the Byrds with Albert Eiler? Some interesting combinations where the mixing of the styles it brought about an enlightening sound, something that would enlighten the listener rather than just entertain.
You mentioned coming to New York as a young man. That was around 65, if I recall. Chico Hamilton's band was one of your first big groups. And what was it like, that first New York experience with Chico?
Incredible. Here I was, thanks to Chico. It was a parade of heroes of mine walking into the studio, coming through the door. Archie Shepp, Richard Davis. I mean, it was fantastic.
What are your favorite jazz styles? What do you prefer most at this point in your career?
I really prefer people who are very lyrical and play intelligent solos and heartfelt solos. And as Miles would say, never finish a phrase. That's the way to always stay fresh, and that's the kind of, those are my parameters.
All right, let's play something off the new album. We already played Manteca. We played If Miles Were Here. What's the selection you'd like us to feature?
It's up to you, man. I'm curious what you might like to,
Well, I really like Blew Your Mind.
That's exactly what I thought. I was thinking it blew your mind.
It's a long one, but we're going to settle in and enjoy it. We'll be back with Larry Coryell after this.
Thank you.
Classic, Larry Coryell. That's off the Sanpaku album. And that's Blew Your Mind. It's the final track on there, clocking in at just over 7 minutes. And interesting album. The styles on this are diverse. And that was something we were talking about on the other side, is the way you embrace different styles and incorporate them together. Other than Manteca, you wrote these songs. How long did it take you to put these songs together?
About 2 weeks.
Okay. Sequencing important to you?
Yes, of course, but the way these titles came out, it kind of sequenced itself.
Everyone has an inspiration point, and we talked about some of the greats you've worked with. When you were just a young man finding your own direction, who or what ignited your passion for music? What drove you into this career?
Oh, man, a lot of great people who were on the scene at the time, dominating the scene at the time, like Cannonball Adderley, Ahmad Jamal. I loved Ahmad Jamal. I thought he was fantastic. The Three Sounds, Dizzy, of course. He had a great band with Kenny Barron and James Moody. Oscar Peterson is amazing. And Freddie. And then when I got to New York, I started to hear Freddie. And in addition to Miles, my mind was blown.
How much impact did Wes Montgomery have on you? You can hear parts of Wes in you, but you've taken it so much further.
Absolutely, Wes. Well, one has to go out of one's way not to just start trying to play exactly like him, because it's so attractive. Wes was a wonderful human being, and he was a brilliant, brilliant musician. Unbelievable. So warm, so innovative. He died way too young.
We've talked about some of the greats that have inspired you, and of course you yourself have inspired many guitar players over the years. At this point in your career, are you doing any teaching or clinics to impact young talents?
Yes, I give Skype lessons to a limited number of students, and I'm going to be doing a teaching clinic at Jorma Kaukonen's Fur Peace Camp, music camp, which is more like a folk guitar finger-picking thing, but he likes to bring me in every few years.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy very much doing it, and it's good for me. I always learn more than the students.
Jorma's such a great talent. One of those forgotten names, going back to the Hot Tuna and Airplane days and doing so much blues stuff on his own these days.
He's a good singer, too.
Yeah, he is. 1979, you formed Guitar Trio with John McLaughlin and Paco de Lucia. Of course, Paco is no longer with us. Have you thought of revisiting that format at this point in your career? It was such a creative outlet, it seemed.
I thought about it about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago before Paco passed. And we almost got there, and it didn't quite happen. But maybe I can do something with John.
I was just thinking, when you mentioned Jorma, how interesting it would be to add his touch and his style to John McLaughlin and yourself.
It would be. Actually, I've got somebody else in mind for the third guitarist. But now that you mentioned that, let me file that away.
Yeah, that would be interesting. You mentioned about George Harrison and his imprints on stuff. And something so left to feel like a Jorma would definitely give some creative source there.
Yeah, coming out of left field. I love it.
You you were leading in a rock direction early on in your career, around the same time Hendrix, Clapton, Santana were becoming known. Why didn't you stay in the rock direction? What drove you into jazz more?
Well, I started out as a jazz musician, basically. My training was in that. It's just with the cultural revolution in the mid-60s, so much rock and contemporary pop music had very appealing musical quality that I just couldn't leave it alone. And I wanted to incorporate some of those ideas in whatever musical environment I was in, whatever group I was in, whatever concept that might be created for a project. And that's how the 11th House was born. I found like-minded people, Alphonse Boussin, Randy Brecker, everybody could play straight ahead, but everybody was also interested in more contemporary ideas.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of straight-ahead guitar players, late, great Emily Rumler, you worked with her for a while till sadly she was taken from us. What was that musical association like?
Unbelievable. She was, like, brilliant. She was a natural player. It just, everything came naturally to her. Of course, she did practice hard, and she studied a lot. She just had it. She just had it. She had that ability to swing and come up with fantastic ideas on the spur of the moment. with a great sound.
Seems like such a waste, such a talent taken too soon.
I know, man, but you know what? We have no control over that stuff.
Right.
As her ex-husband, Monty Alexander, told me when we had a conversation, you know, pursuant to her passing, he said, the way I think about it, Larry, is that she's out of town for a while. Just out of town.
Another great that you spent some time with doing duo concerts, I should say, was Stanley Cowell. What was your association with Stanley like? A friend of mine saw you guys live and said it was one of the best concerts he ever saw.
Oh, thank you. Well, Stanley's just one of those great piano players, man. A pianist who also is well steeped in classical music. He's a great jazz composer, and at the same time, he can be as bluesy and soulful as is possible. He's a great guy, and he taught me a lot. He taught me so much.
Do you play piano as well?
No, I mean, I dabble at it. A lot of times when maybe showing somebody something, you go over to the piano, but I don't. I have enough trouble playing the guitar.
I think you'd have some argument on that.
I'm telling you, man, you got to fight that instrument all the time.
Who are some of your favorite guitarists active today, and who are some of the young guitarists coming up the ranks that you would advise us to watch out for?
Well, I love Bobby Broom, and I think Matheny is great, and I love George Benson. And among the new people, I think Kurt Rosenwinkel and Laga Lund are fantastic. Fantastic players. And there's a guy from Pakistan named Rez Abazi. I like what he's doing very much.
In the 70s.
And also, there's a young fellow who plays with Lou Donaldson, Randy Johnston.
In the mid-70s, you stepped back after doing electric and doing jazz for a while and started playing acoustic music for a few years for a period. What prompted you to do that? And likewise, what drew you back to the electric side?
Well, I just needed to get away from all that volume for a few years. And the acoustic thing, it was different, so people noticed it. And I did these duets with Philip Catherine. First with Steve Kahn, we did some duet tours. And then with Philip Catherine, and it kind of balanced out all the loud electric stuff. So when I went back to it, it didn't feel like it was out of balance.
Okay. In the different formats that you've performed, as we mentioned, the solo acoustic, the duos, the trios, the full bands, do you have a preference when it comes to going on stage, what kind of accompaniment you like?
If I'm going to go on stage, like, you know, in November, I'm going into the Jazz Showcase with Larry Gray and Paul Wertigo, I do that gig because of the way they play, the way Paul approaches the drums and the way Larry approaches the bass. They're just the right styles for what I like to do. In other words, there's a lot of freedom, even though we take relatively easy titles, you know, some standards and some originals that aren't too complex. But there's a lot of freedom. They're always performed differently. And Larry and Paul are welcome to do anything they want, because with that kind of freedom from them, that opens me up and makes it possible for me to play some different stuff.
Well, all right. We were talking in the beginning about touring behind the new album, Senpaku. Are you going to be doing mostly North America? Do you still do a lot of world travel?
Yeah, well, both. I mean, I'd like to focus on touring Senpaku in the States, but that's all up to the marketplace and the agents and the way the business, you know, the business goes in cycles.
Jazz has always been popular in Europe, and it comes and goes, as you mentioned, the cycles in the U.S. Do you get different response when you play outside of America from the audience? Is it bigger venues,
yeah,
bigger?
They're a little bit more fanatic. They're a little bit more fanatic and a little bit more really well informed about all the various kinds of music I've played over the course of my career, which is nice. People very often, you know, share stories with me of memorable performances that I've done that they never forgot, which is very, you know, it's a nice compliment.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the fact when Miles used to go out and play, and he was doing like the doo-bop stuff, and that people came to the show expecting to hear My Funny Valentine and left in some ways disappointed because he was playing a different style. Do you ever get that kind of reaction? Do people say, well, Larry, we loved what you did, but...
Yeah. No, I really haven't gotten... anything to that degree. I mean, there was one time when I was in this strange trio with Andy Summers and Trilok Gürtu. We did a European tour, and one of the things that we hyped it for one particular gig in Germany, I believe, was that we were gonna do some music by Bartok.
Okay.
And Andy and I worked on it, and it was really hard, you know, even though it seemed like it was going to be easy. It was really hard, and so we got to the gig, and we just didn't have the nerve to call any of the Bartok duets, and somebody in the audience about three-quarters of the way through the concert said, "What about Bartok?"
So they had heard about it, huh?
Yeah, that was a low point.
Okay. Given the fact, as we've touched, the different styles and the different eras of your music over the last 50-plus years, are there any that you look back on and kind of cringe, or that you're especially proud of?
Yeah, there's a few things I cringe, especially when I was a heavy drinker. But that all stopped in 1981, and after 1981, I can't say that I did much cringing. I mean, of course, if you really are honest with yourself, you don't always play great. And a lot of times I'm not happy with what I've played, but that's too bad, man, because the music has been done, and it went out there in the air, and we played it, and that's what it was. And if it wasn't good enough, too bad. Try again.
There you go. Is there anything we have not touched on, Larry, that you'd like to let my listeners know about your career, about the new album, about a current tour, anything, any new projects in the works?
Yeah. In 2014, my first opera had its world premiere in Ljubljana, followed by a follow-up performance in Russia with the Russian Philharmonic Orchestra and the singers from University of Ljubljana. And we are going to try and put that combination together again for next May 23rd, at the Kaluga Guitar Festival just outside Moscow. My new opera is Anna Karenina.
Hmm. How well did the opera go over?
Fantastic, especially in Russia. It was War and Peace. The first one was War and Peace. Russians like their own story.
Will you be recording that for anything, for DVD use?
Absolutely.
Or film?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, on that note, as we get ready to wrap things up, Larry, let's go back to the San Paku album a final time and Back to Russia. That's the name of this one. As we close, is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to let listeners know about? Things, maybe projects coming up?
Well, I want to go out where it's appropriate, and I'm not doing anything conflicting with her career or my career. I'd like to back up my wife on some, in situations, maybe small performing arts centers where she sings standards, because even though she's known as a pop singer, she sings great standards.
Speaking of family, your two sons have followed in your footsteps and play guitar. Have you thought of doing a family project with the whole Coryell family?
Well, we did one quite a few years ago. I think it's time for another one.
Because I know they're still very active, aren't they?
Absolutely. Okay. Julian is just very, very active. And Morali has had a few health problems, but he's back. And Morali, the oldest one, is especially popular in Texas, in the Austin area.
Blues.
Very proud of him. Proud of both of them.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll see that coming together soon. And we can keep up with you at your website, correct?
Yeah, LarryCoryell.net.
All right. Well, we'll stay there and keep an eye on all the things coming up.
Well, thank you. I'll be at the Jazz Showcase the week before Thanksgiving.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Looking forward to seeing you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
That wraps up another edition of Midwest Beat. My guest tonight, jazz guitar great Larry Coryell. Catch him live at the Jazz Showcase in Chicago on November 17th. And be sure to check out that brand new album we've been sampling all night, San Paku. The new one from Larry Coryell. I'm Lounges. Thank you so much for tuning in and supporting public radio. I'm out of here. Adios. What a great pleasure it was having Larry Coryell on the program tonight. Hope you enjoyed this special edition. Be sure to catch Larry Coryell in a trio format with Paul Wertico and Larry Gray. It's an 8 p.m. concert at the Jazz Showcase in Chicago on November 17th. Keep up with Larry at LarryCoryell.net. Be sure to tune in and join me for this week's edition of A Look at the Arts at 1 p.m. on Friday, as we pay tribute to the veterans on this Veterans Day. My in-studio guest will be author, composer, and local promoter Bud Monaco of South Productions. We'll be talking to Buddy, himself a veteran, and featuring songs that Buddy has written that were recorded by an all-star Chicago group. That's this Friday on A Look at the Arts, 1 p.m. on the Lakeshore.